Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. My guest on this week's programme is Martin Murray. You may not know his name, but you will know the product, Rose Rock Gin. Martin is part of that new movement in the distilling industry. We've seen this happen before. So over the last 10 years, there's been a growth in the number of craft breweries, and they have changed how beer is appreciated and turned around the declining industry. Well, now is the turn of the craft distillers. Craft distilling was blocked for many years by the licensing rules at HMRC. The rule was based on a minimum size of still of some 1,800 litres. Huge. But in 2009, following a successful challenge by a London gin producer, small production licences were granted and the doors had been opened. It unlocked a new industry of creativity and innovation. This is the story of Martin Murray, a man who has always been passionate about brewing and the drinks industry. It is his journey from a successful career in the oil and gas industry to rekindling his passion for brewing and distilling. In our interview, you will hear about the choices he made and how it all began, the experiments, and what is Holy Grass. This is the story of Rose Rock Gin. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Martin Murray. Hello and welcome to Martin Murray. Thanks for taking the time to be here with me today.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good. I'm so pleased we got to meet. I've seen you around LinkedIn. I've seen your posts on LinkedIn and I thought, oh, that guy looks interesting. Perhaps we should have a conversation on the program. So Martin, this is Life, Passion and Business. The whole objective of this, I put this together, was because I've got to a certain stage in my life where I realized there is more to life than eating, drinking, having children and making money. You know, there's more to life about it. And I'm exploring that conversation with people who look like they may have an answer. So tell me, what's your story? How did you get to where you are now?
It took a long time to get to where we are now. It's actually kind of not the path that I would have thought I would have taken when I was 17 years old, but there you go. I went off to university to study chemical engineering, loved the course and wanted to do my master's in brewing and distilling. As a student, I was very passionate about home brew and very interested in all the distilleries and breweries around Edinburgh. So I looked to do my master's in that subject, but there was no jobs at the time. This is before the days of craft brewing, before craft distillation. Yeah. So not a lot of jobs on the scene. And there was an oil and gas, and I always tell the story that I went to a careers fair and the big breweries and distillers had lots of nice food and free booze, but no jobs. And with a student loan, I couldn't really go with that. I had to go with somewhere that there was work. So I went into oil and gas and I loved it for 11 years. It was a great technical challenge being in the middle of the North Sea then, in Africa, and it was fantastic. It was real problem solving, real cutting edge technology in some of the platforms. But it got to a point where I wanted to move home. We just had our first child, Mac, and I wanted to be home and I wanted to be more around the family and more around our local village. So I made a decision at that point to try and do something about it, and there's not a lot of jobs available in our local community, so the only way I could see it happening was if we went out and created our own jobs.
So how long ago was that?
Time flies. And so I made the decision about 7 years ago. So I was in France and my wife had just moved out. We'd had our second child at this point, and we actually really liked it in the southwest of France. It was a great place to bring a family up, lovely lifestyle, and a great business to work with. And then I was told after a year that the work needs had changed and that my next posting would be in Angola or Nigeria with my family, and I said thank you but no thank you. And that was the point.
This is in the oil and gas industry, is this?
Yeah, that's right. So that was a turning point for me. There were two things that happened around that time. One was that HMRC were challenged on their approvals of small distilleries, and those London distilleries successfully gained licenses to distill in small stills. And then the second thing was that I was asked to move to Africa with my family, and I didn't want to do that, so made that decision to go back into brewing and distilling and try and create a business.
It's interesting. So even though you were involved in oil and gas, you still kept in touch with the distillery industry.
Yeah, I was doing homebrew. I was always interested in the developments and what was happening. I loved when the craft beer scene took off. It was just so exciting.
When you were making homebrew, do you mean by making beers and things?
Yeah, I was making beers, and I was making all sorts of things like elderflower champagne, just anything that we could do that was kind of local or something that different, something we didn't think could be done. So my passion was in stouts and porters, and it was difficult to get good stout up here on tap. So I decided to make my own and started to make dark, thick, heavy stouts and oatmeal stouts, these kind of things. And I loved it, and that would have been a business for me, but unfortunately there was no local market for it. And I knew that we had to have a product that had a local market and a local community to get behind it. So my wife, being a big gin fan, got me into experimenting making gin. Then actually, you know, I fell in love with making gin. That's what I enjoyed the most, was the actual challenge of trying to make a gin that was top class. And I started off quite slowly, spent a lot of time researching ingredients, spent time with a local ranger, with a local herbalist.
So how do you practice that? Because, I mean, like, you know, like making gin is obviously a distillation process. You can't, can you set up in your own house and make a bit of gin on the side to test it, or is that illegal?
No, you can get a compounder's license. It's a bit more straightforward, but that's what we did. Was we got a compounder's license to then try soaking berries in vodka, try soaking leaves in vodka, and then just understanding what happens to flavors when you introduce them to alcohol initially on a cold basis.
All right, so you can steep. Yeah. Of course, you can steep, can't you? Like steep things in links. Then that's a way of making a gin without actually distilling it.
Yeah, that's a good initial way to learn about flavors and alcohol. And then we got a license, but we were waiting on a lot of other things to come through. So we just started to play with smaller stills and learn that way. So it took us around about 85 different trials to get to where we wanted to be. And then we had to scale it up. So it took a long roundabout way via the North Sea to get to making gin in the north of Scotland.
It's Var France and a bit of Africa, isn't it, really?
It was a quite long way to get to back where we started, to be honest.
So what was the turning point for you? Is it obviously you've created the gin, so what's special about your gin that you've created?
So when we started, the goal was pretty simple, actually. We wanted to make a gin that did two things. One, that we could put a local flavor profile into it, so using berries from the forest along with traditional ingredients that we bought in. And then secondly, we wanted to be able to get a gin that we both genuinely enjoyed drinking, so one that we went to the cupboard and that would be our gin of choice. So that actually takes quite a lot of work, because the first time you make a gin, you like it, and then the novelty wears off and you go back to your tried and trusted. So it does take a year to make a gin that you really do enjoy. So that was a challenge. So what makes our gin special? It's the taste, and then it's also the presentation. So my job as the engineer and distiller was to create the product flavor, and my wife with the creative eye created the product design. So one night at the kitchen table, I said to her, I said, you know, if nobody buys a bottle of our gin, it's because you've done a lousy job of the design. She quickly replied to me that if nobody bought a second bottle, it's because I'd done a lousy job of the distillation. So
that's what I was going to say, actually. It's like a book, isn't it? The book on the cover.
Yeah, that's right. So a bit of serious discussions at the dinner table about that. it was really good fun, and that's what our challenge was. And you know, it just exceeded all of our expectations. We thought this was going to be cottage industry for us, and you know, our profile was that it was going to be the two of us part time for 3 years. And now, 3 years later, there's 14 of us, which is incredible for a small village like Dunnet to have 14 people working here. It's incredible, really.
And your gin is now all over the country, or has it left these shores and now traveling the world as well?
Yeah, traveling the world. It's in Japan, it's Switzerland. We're just about to look into other countries within Europe. So we're doing well.
It does sound like it. And I see it around.
Yeah. And
tell me. Yeah, I have seen it. I see it in Inverness Airport and various places I travel. Just for our listeners, just remind them of the brand.
It's Rock Rose Gin is our main brand. And then we also do Holy Grass Vodka.
Holy Grass Vodka. Okay. So what does that mean? Is that a vodka with something in it? Or are you actually starting from scratch?
It is. It's a vodka with something in it. So the reason for doing the vodka was simply to keep an old story alive and to showcase an ingredient that grows in our local area. So when I was doing the research at the start, I fell in love with the story of Holy Grass, which was first discovered growing in the UK on the banks of our local river Thurso. And I love that story, and I love the story of the guy who found it, and I wanted to bring that story to life in a spirit. And initially it was going to be gin, but the flavour doesn't work. It doesn't complement juniper at all. They kind of fight with each other. So I then held it and released it as a vodka, and it's great because the vodka's got the story on the back. The design incorporates elements of the stories around Thurso River about where it's found, and we love it. We love that we've created the UK's first grass vodka, and that we can keep this story alive from our local area.
Well, you're going to have to tell us the story of Holy Grass now, because you've whetted my appetite for the story.
It's really interesting. So there was a chap called Robert Dick, who was a trained baker, and his father was posted to Caithness as an excise officer. So there's your link to alcohol. He was posted to Caithness as an excise officer, and his son moved up with him to run a bakery. He baked in the morning, and his housekeeper sold the goods in the afternoons, and he got interested in botany and geology, and spent a lot of time in the area looking at fossils and collecting all the different things that grew here. Now he discovered Holy Grass, and he didn't have any real credibility because he hadn't had any formal training or education in botany, and believe you me, it's really hard to identify Holy Grass from other grass. So when he said that he found it, he was discredited because an amateur botanist couldn't have found it growing in such a remote part of Scotland when it hadn't been found anywhere else in the UK by better botanists. But
what is Holy Grass?
It's bison grass, actually. It's the same grass as bison grass. It's like a vanilla grass, and it looks like grass. It just smells vanilla. It's sweeter style. And the Polish use it in Zbrojka, and we use it in Holy Grass. And it gets the name Holy Grass because it used to be used in churches, either as a carpet or as a roof. And as a carpet, obviously, when you kind of trampled on it, it gave that nice vanilla smell. So that's where the story comes from the guy who found it, Robert Dick. And we tell that story on the back of our bottle. And it's nice to have something that was first discovered growing in the UK on our local river.
And does it taste the vanilla?
Smells, no. It's got a very sweet taste. It's not as vanilla tasting as it is on the nose. So we use it with apples from the Black Isle, and then cinnamon, which isn't so local. It comes from Sri Lanka, so a real mix of local and exotic ingredients, and it gives it a really nice taste to it. So you've got almost like a kind of like an apple pie vodka there. You've got the apples, the cinnamon, and a touch of vanilla.
So what's it all about for you? Because I can hear the passion coming through when you talk about this. So is it the passion for the flavors? Is it passion for the process? Is it where is this coming from and going to?
It's changed so much. You know, 4 years ago, the passion was very much process, where I was obsessed with trying to make our perfect spirit by learning about local ingredients. That was our passion. And then over time, it's changed. It's actually a passion about trying to make other people successful in our business, about trying to further the reach of our local product around the world. So we get a lot of satisfaction now seeing it in nice bars and nice restaurants, and thinking that came from done it in the north coast of Scotland, which is really, really cool. But I really, really enjoy just everything around the business now as it grows. It's obviously more challenging. We've got more people, but seeing other people doing our jobs better than us and with the same passion is so exciting.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So how do you maintain your passion? What is it about? What keeps it going? Because it's, as you say, passions move and change.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because every day, it's always that everybody uses the same terms. Every day is different. It is very much so here. We're extending the building. We're adding a second still. So there's always challenges. And for me, the variety keeps my passion alive. We're, at the start of this year, we were designing our extension for our office. And then within a month, we're trying to figure out how to control a still so that it comes on later than the second still. And that kind of technical challenge is it's really fascinating, but then the other things around it just keeps you going. You know, there's always something new. I think the other thing as well is the industry is so exciting at the moment. You know, with craft distilleries, craft breweries, there's a really exciting scene, and having that excitement almost in front of you every day keeps you passionate and keeps you motivated to keep going.
Yes, I can certainly see that passion, that not necessarily passion, but that energy in the small steel industry, because every week there's a new vodka turning up or something new coming out.
Yeah, that's right. And it's competition, but actually, you know, it's actually not turning out that way. What you're finding out is that the big guys of the world are losing sales and the wee guys are gaining sales. So all of our small distilleries are doing well and continuing to grow. And that's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
I guess also part of that thing is you're probably going to trigger into the bigger distilleries to start producing gins and vodkas, because where you know the whiskey industry lays a whiskey down, and of course they've got minimum of 10 years where they can sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas your product does it have any maturation time, or is it literally distilled and available?
Yeah, but people do it different ways with gin. We normally see around about 2 to 3 days. It gives it time to settle, gives us time to take our temperature readings or alcohol readings, and also just check the consistency of the product. But you're right, it's that quick. And compared to whiskey, you don't have that serious investment and you don't have that long wait for it to be ready. So gin's got that going for it. But what you're also seeing is it's a spread that's got so much flexibility. So you can have a really spicy gin, you can have a really sweet gin, you can have flavoured gins from like a liqueur style. So you've got a great range of options with the gin. And what you're finding is the small guys, just like they were in the beer world, they're so creative and they're willing to give unusual flavours a go, and that's just fantastic for consumers. You know, they can really try limited edition releases that are exciting.
Yes, yeah, I can see that would be really interesting. And you can feel the energy in it. And I guess what also makes a difference is that it's made gin accessible to different age ranges, whereas gin was once a very stuffy product, and now it's become something much more relevant to a wider audience.
Yeah, we found that from our experience at shows. So when we started 4 years ago, quite often the reaction we were met with was, I don't like gin, as if gin was just this one thing. So you've had it once, you've tasted it, you don't like
it. Well, it was juniper, that was it, wasn't it? Juniper.
Yeah, and most people's experience are with big brand that's well available, it's slightly more perfumey than other gin. So that was the reaction, and we were saying, well, you know what, if you've not tried gin for 15 years, then why don't you try ours and just confirm that you don't like it for the rest of your life? And that was kind of our way in to get people to try ours. But and actually they were surprised, because there's a different style, it's not as strong, not as floral, and people like it because it's a different style. And you find that the quality of gin's improved, the quality of tonic's improved, and the knowledge around it's improved. So people are getting gins that are tailored to their flavour preference, and that's different then. So now when we speak to people at shows, we say, oh, do you like gin? And they say, well, I don't like floral gins, or I don't like spicy gins. It's not just a kind of one answer, I don't like gin. It's a lot more to it now people have a gin they like or a style of gin they like.
And it's what's happened, isn't it? What's effectively happened is the industry's widened in terms of where whiskey had, you got varieties of whiskey, now you've got varieties of gin, which is a great story.
Absolutely.
So coming back to you and your process, is there, you know, what do you see the future for yourself in this? Do you see yourself doing this forever?
I don't know, actually. I keep asking myself that. It's the toughest question. You get that from day one where people ask you, what do you see the long-term vision? And, you know, when you first start business, your vision is very much on making the business successful enough to survive. So our goal was for me to be at home and have a meaningful influence on our children's lives. And to do that, that was everything to us. We achieved that, and that's great. And then after that, people are asking, well, what do you do next? Where do you see this going? And we don't think that far ahead. We think about this year, and we want to enjoy it. We want to continue to do as well as what we're doing. But I think our honest answer will be, we will keep doing it the way we're doing it until it stops being fun, because it is fun. It's really enjoyable, and it's really satisfying at the moment. And until that changes, I don't think there's any reason for us to do anything about it.
So are you someone that sees themselves as retiring at some stage? Is retirement any something? Because it's like that question, isn't it? Like, is there okay, so what I'm getting at, is there a boundary between work and not work?
Yeah, we have to do that, especially being a husband and wife team. We have to make sure that we have proper time away from the business. Yeah. So we have quite strict rules around the conversation at the dinner table that we are not allowed to talk about work, especially in front of the children. When they're there, we try to talk about other things and try and have a bit of a normal life. And then between 7 and 9, we will go back to work. And then at 9, we switch off completely. So we have quite strict boundaries. But the other thing that we've gotten better at now is giving us more time to do things that we want to do, especially while the children are still young. We still want to go places with them, want to do things with them. So we step away from the business, and we've got people now trained up who can take over from us. So that's really where I see it going, actually, is that we do less and less, but we're still involved with the business, and we just rely on other people to do it. And if it continued like that from now and for another 50 years, I'd be quite happy. I'd be quite happy to stay working in the business, but just to do less.
Yes, of course, the challenge is when you operate a business and you enjoy certain parts of it, you have to let go of stuff. And that's the challenge, isn't it?
It is.
How you let go of things without and take on the new challenge, because there's always something new you can do. But it's that challenge saying, OK, no, that's not my job anymore.
Yeah. And you know, the amazing thing is, I think one of the things I find hard is that every time I get someone else to do something, they do it better than me, and that's quite hard. And the reason they do it better than us is because we really have limited time. So myself and Claire have to spread ourselves quite thin over things, and that means that when we give someone the opportunity to do a part of our job, they generally have more time to do it, so they therefore do it better than us. And that can be quite hard, because you've feel that you are the key part to the business, and that if you go away for a day, the whole thing's going to collapse, it's going to fail. And the reality is not that at all, and that can be quite hard to accept, because you kind of defines your wee bit that you are the business and the success is you. And actually, when you realize that it's not, that's quite hard to take, but it's actually really good, because you get to go out on your bike and cycle, you get to go for walks, you get to do things that you couldn't do if you were the one person that it all depended on.
Yeah, that's a conversation I had with someone else who said, you know, when your business is successful is when you can walk away from it and come back and it's still operating.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. That's where we have to get to. Right.
Wow. How long away from that are you, do you think?
I'd hope by next year. I really do. We had our first holidays last year. So that was a success for us, to be able to go away and have no email, no phone calls, and enjoy just family time. So that was a first step, and I can't see why by the end of this year we're not going to be in a position where it just takes care of itself, but we'll always be around about it.
That sounds great. So look, I've explored my questions with you, really. So I always have this last question that I ask any guest, really, which is, Is there anything that I have that I haven't asked you that you think I should have done?
Yeah, I do actually. I think you should ask us why done it.
Okay then, why done it?
We grew up here. I'm from Thurso. My wife's from Dunnet, and it's just a beautiful part of the world.
But you better say where Dunnet is, because I think a lot of people will go, Dunnet? Well, where's Dunnet?
Exactly. Dunnet Head is the most northerly tip of Scotland, and we're in the village Dunnet, which is just 2 miles south of Dunnet Head, and that's home to my wife and her family. Several generations of her family grew up and lived here, and I'm from Thurso, which is just to the west of Dunnet. It's a bigger town of about 10,000 people, so it's home for us, and we love it. It's a slow pace of life. It's great freedom for children, and the outdoors is just fantastic.
We're just to acknowledge the benefits of technology, I'm speaking to you from London, and we're 600 and something miles away, so it's interesting that the quality is actually quite good.
Yeah, we're quite lucky. We built the distillery next to the fiber exchange, so we were one of the first places to get fiber and then done it, so it was great, and it's helped us a lot. It means I don't have to travel so much. And yeah, that's Dunnet is our home, and we love it, and it's great that we've been able to build a distillery just 1 mile from our house, which means I get to have a nice walk in the summer to work.
So, okay, here's a question for you. What is the meaning of life? How do you find meaning in what you do?
I've thought about this before, and I think if you can give your life a meaning, then you don't have to worry about the meaning of life. So we've dedicated the last few years to trying to create the product and create the team, and I think that gives us a lot of satisfaction. I think by keeping busy, we don't have to worry about the meaning of life. Just keeping busy is enough.
That's a good answer. Good as answer is it? Good as answer is any?
I don't know if it is. I really don't know if it is. I had a quick chance to think about it there for all of about 2 seconds. We enjoy what we do, and long may it continue.
I think what happens is when people get to the point where you're no longer enjoying what you do, that's when those questions come back up again. Mm-hmm. And as long as you can keep that passion going for what you do, or find a new passion to take its place, that's what I'm picking up from the conversations I'm having. And from my own experience, and I'm still searching for that question. I'm still searching for the answer to that question, because I still see people that actually don't have a passion in their life, or they are doing a job, or they have their own business, and they're not actually inspired by it, but they do it anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right that it does come more to the front of your mind when you're not happy, or something's not going right with your work or with your business. So we're fortunate we've not had to think too much about it. In my previous job, I did think about it quite a bit, and I'll send you a link to a talk that I used to listen to on repeat whenever I had those thoughts, which was around how to get the work-life balance, and how the work-life balance is always wrong because there's too much work and not enough life. And it's a very amusing talk, and I always like that. I always like listening to it to motivate me to do this, what we do today.
Yes. I mean, there's obviously the famous guy, Simon Sinek. He always talks about a business needs to start with why.
Yeah.
Because when you know why you do something, then it's easier to start moving from there. And clearly, your why is about producing new gin, different types of gin, different types of flavour, bringing that to people.
Yeah, that's right. Our why is actually changing as well. So why is now about trying to create jobs, trying to create a sustainable business that we can train people up and that can continue to grow without us, without relying on us so much.
Yeah. Well,
I was going to say the talk that I was going to send you is, and I've just remembered it. It's by a guy called Nigel Marsh, and it's how to make the work-life balance work, which is really funny and well worth a listen.
Okay, I'll put that on, and what I'll do, I'll put that on the links on here. Right. So tell me, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or know more about what you do, how do they do that?
Oh, my wife does all the social media, so you'll get are on Facebook and on Twitter under the handles of Rock Grows Gin. And then we've got our website as well, which is www.rockgrowsgin.co.uk. And yeah, you'll find out more about our distillery and see where we are on that website.
Great. So thank you so much to Tay for taking some time out to be with me, Martin. It's been a great conversation, and I've learned a lot about gin and vodka, which is all the better.
No, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it as well, and thanks for the call from London.
That's great. Well, and who knows, maybe we'll be talking again in 5 years' time when you're doing something new.
Yeah, I hope so.
You have been listening to Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and Martin Murray. If you would like to experience Rose Rock Gin, it is widely available. If you'd like to know more about the distillery or Dunnett, then check out the website. As ever, please share this podcast on social media and subscribe to it in your podcast app. It only remains me to say thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.